Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Dr. Mo Hanna, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello, Francis, and I apologize for my raspy voice, but getting over a little sinus infection, so hopefully I'll make it through.
I think we have to apologize to our listeners. We're kind of shifted 10 minutes over.
Yeah,
because they're doing some new work at the studio, and that kept us from going live until now.
So you got a little newspaper clipping there?
Today is an exciting date in history. The most interesting thing is in 1865, President Abraham Lincoln was shot and mortally wounded by John Wilkes Booth during a performance of Our American Cousin at the Ford Theater in Washington. He died 9 hours later. Oddly enough, on the exact same date in 1775, the first American Society for the Abolition of Slavery was formed in Philadelphia, and considering he was the president that was...
Yeah, so it's kind of weird timing.
It is weird timing that it happened on exactly that same date, and just for bad karma on that date. In 1912, it's also the same date that the British... liner RMS Titanic collided with an iceberg in the North Atlantic and began sinking. It was an exciting day.
A lot of lost holes in that date, yeah. The you sent me a YouTube thing the other night, which was kind of
right.
Cute.
And it's posted on our website on the Signs of Life radio page. If anybody's listening and hasn't seen it yet, it is absolutely adorable.
Yeah, well, you got me thinking about that because, I mean, the clip shows a dolphin, obviously in the water and by a dock, and there was a cat that was on the dock, and every time the dolphin would pop up, the two of them would seemingly be affectionate towards each other.
Yeah.
So I know you were asking... if I thought that there was some telepathic, communication going on. Is that what you think? Or?
Yeah, because if you watch the clip, and it's pretty long for what's occurring. I mean, it's just the cat getting accustomed to the dolphin and realizing it was a safe situation, and the dolphin realizing it's a safe situation, and then by the end of the clip, they just can't stop nuzzling each other. It's absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
While I'm watching it, I'm saying, do they instinctively know that they're okay to be with each other, or did they telepathically communicate at the beginning, like, this is cool, this is wonderful, I'm not a fish in the fishbowl that you could stick your paw in and pull out and eat,
Yeah. There's always a fine line between that, with instinct or, telepathic communication. I mean, where certain things seem to be instinctual. I remember watching the documentary on the penguins, one penguin would stay with the babies and one parent would go out. I think it was the father that stayed
right.
with the babies, and the mother would go out and swim in the sea for a couple of hundred miles, looking for food, and eventually return to an island of tens of thousands of penguins who all look identical.
At least us, they all look
and then go straight towards, you know, the their mate. So, you know, is that that could be some sort of telepathic communication. It could be a frequency. You know, we all emit certain waves, and
right.
Maybe they tune in. It's a frequency thing.
I know, and it made me think of also of the experiment with the plants, where they were going to burn the leaf, but before they even burnt the leaf, just the striking of the match created a response in the leaf that was going to be burned. So with that in mind, the same thing. On the same day, I was supposed to take one of our cats to the vet, and usually when I go up to the room to greet her in the morning, she just comes running out of the room. But somehow this particular morning, she knew she was going to the vet, and she hid inside the closet in a space where you would never be able to find her.
Right, and you didn't make any sounds that would indicate that, you know, that the routine was different.
The same routine as every single day.
So how did she know? You know,
how did she know?
So now that would be, you know, it's hard to say that would be instinct. You know, that would be picking up some sort of a vibe, wouldn't you think? Sort of energy vibe. You know,
she knows I'm coming to get her. The same way the leaf knew that it was going to be burned.
Yeah, I'm sure people that have cats and other animals have lots of stories like that. I was sitting in traffic the other day, and I was watching, a flock of birds. I guess it must have been at least 100, you know, flying in formation, and then instantly, you know, they would zigzagging and all 100 in formation go the other way, and then instantly back and forth like ping pong balls, and it, you know, it's quite amazing to watch. It's, you know, just a swarm that goes back and forth, and you know, are they sending signals to each other?
They have to be, because I read, you know, and science doesn't always get it right. In fact, I'm gonna take a guess that science pretty much never gets it right. But I read a report about the reason the birds fly in those formations is aerodynamics, that to fly a little to the left of a bird flying in front of you creates this stream that makes it easier to advance in the sky. But if they're all turning on a moment's notice, that's impossible.
Yeah, this wasn't like a V formation, because there were hundreds of birds, you know, so it looked more like a swarm to the naked eye, you know, but so, you know, it's incredible. But, you know, even as civilizations go, you know, it may not be genetic, you know, that we inherit these things from generation to generation. One theory is that there are these morphogenic fields, and that they're passed on, you know, and people have this, maybe you want to call it this outer body, this ethereal body that has knowledge that our biological body doesn't, you know. So,
well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because today I was reading some more of the Seth materials, and that's exactly what Seth is talking about, is that we just have this physical body, but within it. You've heard the term going within. It's literally what you're supposed to be doing, is going to your inner self, which is really the mechanics that runs everything. It produces what we need in order to navigate this reality. Quite interesting.
Well, let's go to a break, and when we come back, we'll have our guest on the line, Dr. Mo Hanna, who is a professor and a psychologist, and she'll be able to speak to us in many aspects about grief and related phenomena that we talk about. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Mo Hanna. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
And Dr. Mo Therese Hanna is a professor of psychology at Siena College in New York State. She's a clinical psychologist who specializes in relationship therapy. She's published 5 books and produced numerous articles and presentations on topics related to relational psychology. She's also an expert in the field of battered mothers' custody problems and chairs the Battered Mothers' Custody Conference. Dr. Hanna will be presenting at the Forever Family Foundation's upcoming grief retreat weekend in Connecticut in May, and we are so happy to have you with us. Hello, Dr. Hanna.
Hi there, Bob and Fran. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, we got over a few technical problems, and you're coming in loud and clear.
you know,
Dr. Hanna, on the subject of grief, which is a topic that comes up by the nature of what we do very often, we've spoke to more than a few clinical psychologists who it appears that they counsel their patients to disassociate from deceased loved ones as opposed to fostering a continuing relationship. So is that because many psychologists feel that trying to make contact with somebody that's deceased is unproductive or possibly delusional?
Well, if you follow the psychological model that most psychologists are trained in, we're trained in what's called the scientist-practitioner model primarily, and we're trained in the psychiatric medical model of mental illness in most cases. And so according to that model, the whole notion of speaking or communicating or connecting with somebody on the other side, it's not within that paradigm. In fact, according to the primary paradigm, as you well know, if you're communicating or believe you're communicating with somebody who has passed on, you might be considered delusional or perhaps maybe at best eccentric. But there's really no language, there's no framework within the field of psychology, with a certain number of exceptions within the field of maybe psychospirituality or transcendental psychology or transformational psychology. There are some branches within the field that recognizes paranormal experiences or spiritual experiences. In fact, there's probably a whole branch, I could say, of psychology that is sort of what we would call transpersonal psychology that certainly would give credence to what Forever Family Foundation and other people who work within the spiritual realm are talking about. But certainly as a psychologist per se, in terms of my own background and my own training, working with the spirit, working with the world of spirit, working with, you know, personal relationship with our loved ones in spirit, it's barely acknowledged, much less taught and facilitated.
So when you talk about this different approach to healing, is that under the general term of psycho-spiritual healing?
Well, it depends upon how you define it. When I talk about my own take on healing and helping others and getting over trauma, improving ourselves psychologically, feeling better mentally, and so on and so forth, I think of it as belonging to the psycho-spiritual realm. But that's because of my own bent and my own experiences and my own learnings. And I would dare to say that there probably are a lot of professionals in the mental health field, and you know them, people that are in the mental health and in the physical medical health field who have, for whatever number of reasons, recognized that there's something beyond what's in those textbooks, something beyond what we understand through our five senses. So I use the word psycho-spiritual. Many other people use the word psycho-spiritual, but it's really the designation that I feel most comfortable with.
You know, sometimes people ask us, they're sort of on the fence about, you know, whether there's an afterlife or not. They're open to the idea. They're having a terrible time with their grief, and they ask us if we could recommend, a psychologist. And, you know, sometimes they'll even say, but, you know, I don't want a psychologist that's going to look at me like I'm totally nuts if I bring up an afterlife. How would somebody that has never been to a mental health professional before, is there a way of them knowing, is it something they could ask their psychologist before they go? Do you believe in an afterlife? You know, I mean, how does one protect themselves from that?
You know, I honestly don't know, and I think that question applies any time that you're going to go see a mental health practitioner.
Yeah.
You know, when you go to see a mental health practitioner, the way I think of it sometimes is, you know, sometimes people are putting their very soul into your hands. And when you're going to have a relationship with somebody, especially when you're in the deep crisis of grief, where the pain is sometimes, it feels like it's beyond your ability to cope, you don't just want to go to just anybody, you know. And the same thing if you're having problems in your marriage. You know, I tell, because I do a lot of couples therapy, and people will ask me, well, if I can't see you, is there somebody else I should see? And I say, well, see somebody who really knows how to do couples therapy. See somebody who really invests a lot of time and energy into that field. And so it's like any other choice we make when we want to find somebody to get some help from. How do you know that this person is going to be compatible with you? Sometimes it's hit or miss. A lot of times it's word of mouth.
Right.
you know, so I can't really tell anybody how to find somebody with whom they would feel comfortable discussing these kinds of issues, you know, dealing with the afterlife. Well, I just know that for me, that is what I certainly, when going through my own grief, that is certainly what helped me. That's what I sought out. And it ended up not being a mental health practitioner. In fact, it ended up being folks like you.
Yeah, and, you know, and now on that subject, and a lot of things that we hear, especially with people who have lost children, you know, and you ask them if they went to a professional, and they'll say, well, you know, I went once or twice, but, you know, how could somebody possibly know what I'm feeling if they didn't lose
right.
a child? And, of course, in your personal life, we know that you suffered the same loss. So I think to some degree that's true. I mean, there aren't too many professionals that can relate unless they've been in that same person's shoes.
Been in that person's shoes, but also have recovered sufficiently themselves. Because just because a professional has been through, say, a similar situation, does not mean that they are necessarily going to be helpful. I think that's why as a psychologist, as a mother, because I have three living children, I see clients, I teach, I have many things to do in this world, and it was very clear to me, and I'm sure you've had similar realizations, that the only way I was going to be able to continue to be facilitative or helpful to others was to be able to help heal myself. That if I could not somehow climb out of this deep, dark hole of pain, how could I help others to do the same? So being in a position of being a helping professional, in some ways, it's like a two-edged sword. But one of the benefits of it is that you have a real strong motivation. If you're going through difficulties, you have a very strong motivation to get better.
Mm-hmm.
You have a very strong motivation to do what you're asking your clients to do.
So overall, I suspect I know the answer to this question, but if you studied people that are in grief and you took those that believed in an afterlife and those that didn't, would you find that the people that believed in an afterlife were made more progress in the coping with their grief?
Honestly, frankly, I'm not sure how anybody copes with grief and turns that grief into something different, something greater, unless they have an awareness of the afterlife. I honestly don't know how you do it, okay? And I'm admitting that as a psychologist. And let me tell you how I know that. I know that from personal experience, because when I went through my own loss, at that time, I didn't believe in an afterlife. So I went through a major transformation in my own thinking and realization and experience, and I know the difference. And the difference for me was recognizing the truth, recognizing what death really is and what it's not.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think you're absolutely right, because the only thing that could give you any hope, because it's all about hope. I mean, you just don't see any hope when you're in that dark abyss. So
right.
The only thing that can give you hope is the belief or the knowledge that someday, in some form, that you're going to see your loved one again, and that life is a continuum. And I know we certainly see it. You know, those that are convinced that an afterlife seem to go on to lead meaningful lives. You know,
mm-hmm. Right.
Again, and many who don't, unfortunately, never get back to any semblance of what their prior life was. So, well, when you counsel people that come to you and that are grieving, I mean, do you bring up that discussion, or is that something that you, as a psychologist, will sit back and wait for them to talk about it?
No, certainly there are some problems and issues that clients will bring in. Sometimes sitting back is the wise thing to do. In this particular circumstance, when somebody has lost a loved one, especially a child, but any loved one, sitting back is the last thing I would do, because I know, having been in that place, you haven't the faintest idea of what to do, okay? And that's where you start. You just don't know what to do to make yourself feel whole again, you know? That people feel completely discombobulated by the experience. And again, especially if it's the loss of a child, that unnatural, as we might say, unnatural, if you could call it that, kind of loss, we're not prepared for it. We don't know what to do. And so I gently and carefully and ethically present different possibilities. One thing I do is, I'm sitting in my counseling office right now, and in my office and in my waiting area, I have a slew of books. And I have many of the books that you recommend on your program and the books that I read, and I have a lending library. And so one way to sort of help people, if they want to open up their minds, is to suggest certain books. For example, one book that I've started with a lot of people is the one you know very well, which is Hello from Heaven.
Right.
Because it's very simple, very straightforward, and it's like one of those classic books.
Mm.
And I have many other books, and so... And certainly it's not something you want to push on people. I mean, if somebody had tried to push it on me when I was early in my grief, I would have told them where to go.
Yeah.
So you have to work with each person right where they are. As again, I'm sure I'm saying something you already know.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that because the just recently we have a neighbor who suffered a loss. She lost her husband. And when we went over to visit, we happened to put that very book in our hands and just said, the time is right, just take a look. And we were over there again. It's been a couple of months now, last week. And she said, I picked up that book. But one thing that I may not have thought of before is she said it was both comforting and a little disturbing. It was comforting because she read about all the different contacts that people were having, and it seemed to be a lot of evidence that, indeed her husband still survived. On the other hand, she was saying to herself, well, look at this. This book is filled with hundreds of people who are in contact with their loved ones. How come I'm not in contact with mine? So
yeah, well, yeah. So what I would say is not yet.
Right, which is what
not
we
not yet.
Yeah. So, yeah, and the odd thing is, she said she's not in contact, and then she's told us about at least 7 or 8 extraordinary things that have happened since.
You're right.
But I said, well, hello. But
yes, exactly. That's what we all do. That's how we all started. It's like, that wasn't anything.
Yeah.
Until it begins to happen over and over and over again. So.
Well, do you find also, I guess it's true, it happened in your personal life. I mean, it happened in mine. I mean, very often it takes some sort of severe emotional or physical trauma or loss to get people to start contemplating things they never contemplated before. So you search for meaning, why, I never thought of that before. But that's a common theme of many people that we know, is that they just were leading their merry life before and very materialistic in a lot of ways, and then all of a sudden, that life is gone and a new life starts.
That's right. That's right. And what are you going to make of this new life? And, many of us go down, and it's very easy to do, isn't it? It's very easy to fall into despair.
Yeah. I guess you hear it all the time, is that people, when they come to you and when they're grieving and they say, I think I'm going crazy. I'm sure you must hear that.
All the time.
Yeah, it's because
yes.
All those emotions just wreak havoc on what's going on.
Yes, they do.
You wanted to talk a little bit about procedure that you're trained in, and I know it was developed by Dr. Alan Botkin, this induced after-death communication. Can you tell us... for those that are unfamiliar with it, what the procedure entails and what happens?
Sure. IADC is something that really Alan Botkin, who is a psychologist in the Chicago area, discovered when he was working at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Illinois with traumatized veterans. He was a VA psychologist. Ironically, I once was also a VA psychologist, and so I know the setting he's talking about and the kinds of folks that he was working with are people with PTSD, people who had lost buddies on the battlefield, people who were diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, people who had other kinds of mental and other kind of social ills. And he was using a technique called EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which is at this point, it's been around a good 20 years. It's a relatively new technique that was developed by another psychologist by the name of Francine Shapiro. And she and the EMDR organization trained a number of psychologists and other practitioners to use EMDR, and Alan was one of those. And Alan was using EMDR, which is a type of eye movement therapy. There's a technique involved with it where people re-experience trauma while they are being led to move their eyes back and forth. It's a little bit more complicated than that. I don't want to oversimplify it, but that's sort of like it in a nutshell. And when he was working with traumatized veterans, he was having a large number of these veterans, a surprising number of these veterans, spontaneously reporting that they were seeing, feeling, sensing some message, some contact with somebody who had passed on. Sometimes that person was a fellow soldier who had died on the battlefield, or it might have even been a relative that had passed on. But that this was happening with such frequency that Alan decided there must be something to this. And so what he did was he trained his colleagues at the VA to use induced after-death communication, which, again, it's a modification of EMDR. So it's EMDR plus something else. It's a slightly different modification of the major EMDR procedure. Long story short is his colleagues were getting the same results. The veterans were reporting at very high rates at some point during this procedure that they were having contact with somebody who was on the other side. And so Alan, being much more of a scientific type, you know, he was not a believer, he was not religious, he was not spiritual, he told me this personally, what he was recognizing is that, well, his clients were telling him that they were experiencing this. And he didn't decide whether it was true, false, or somewhere in between. He just refined the technique and taught other psychologists, people who are, you know, licensed practitioners. He doesn't just teach to anybody. He teaches it to people who are already licensed as practitioners and people who have already been trained in EMDR to use this with others. And he was getting, as well as other practitioners, were getting an extremely high rate of reports of people having these spontaneous, or actually not spontaneous, where they're called induced, but these surprising connections with loved ones on the other side. And people were getting better. People were feeling healed as a result of these experiences. And so what happened for me was when I had my loss, this was almost exactly 4 years ago, it was April 25th, 2007, I was like anybody else. I was absolutely blown out of the water. And it became very clear to me very quickly that I was in deep trouble. As a psychologist, you know, I've been trained in many different psychological approaches. I've been trained to some extent in grief work. I'd actually done some grief work when I was at the VA. I used to work with HIV-positive veterans, some of whom were terminal. But I didn't have a clue as to how to continue living. And so I sought out the books and the materials and the experiences that I felt might help me. And so I was trained in EMDR because I heard Alan on your show. And when I heard him on your show, first time I'd heard him, was on your show, went out, got his book, read the book. I said, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to experience for myself, and this is what I want to do as a practitioner. I felt that calling, and that's exactly what I did. And I can tell you that although IEDC is not the only healing modality I've participated in, and it's certainly not the only healing modality that I use with others, I found it to be it was like a benchmark in my own healing process. Mm. And go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. So you went through the process yourself with Alan inducing you?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And did you see your daughter?
Yes, I did. Okay. I had a very powerful visual experience during the treatment, and it was not the end all and be all. It was the beginning of my still growing contact with my daughter, and of my understanding, my growing understanding of where we stand in the greater spectrum of existence.
Yeah, and how wonderful that you were able to take, you know, that deep personal experience and translate that into, you know, helping others that are in your situation. You know, there are people that say that things, sometimes it makes me a little crazy about, you know, the things that are predestined and
yeah,
on the other side. But I'm sure you hear it from people that this is what you were meant to do, you know.
But, oh, yes, and of course that goes through your head. And, of course, what you want to say is, listen, I'd rather have my daughter back. I'd rather have my child back. I'd rather have my husband back
right.
than be doing this work. But I also believe that things happen for a reason. I think many of us probably do tend to fall on that side where there somehow seems to be an order to what happens to us, or at least maybe we are called to make order out of it.
Hmm. And we're going to go to a break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about some of these other, you know, healing modalities that people can explore. So stay with us, and we will be back in a couple of minutes.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest here tonight is Dr. Mo Hanna. This show is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to Dr. Mo Hanna, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. With these hard economic times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show. They want to see it continue. They love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find your items, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holiday of the Earth Raffle 2011 is in full swing. The winners are going to be pulled soon on April 22nd. That only leaves a few days left. You can win up to five medium readings. The mediums are Bobby Allison, Laura Lynn Jackson, Lynn LeClaire, Dave Campbell, and Kathy Tell. It's $5 a chance, and we're asking that you either visit the website for more instructions on how to mail in your checks to buy chances. PayPal no longer entertains selling raffles via the buy buttons on their website. So that having been said, we have only sold 360 tickets right now, so your chances of winning multiply in this raffle are very, very good. So again, send in your checks to Forever Family Foundation, 222 Atlantic Avenue, Oceanside, New York, 11572. And lastly, we're going to have a wonderful Afterlife Exploration Retreat, Transforming Grief into Hope and Understanding, the weekend of May 20th to 22nd in Chester, Connecticut. And it's easy to get to by plane, train, and automobile. We've been there before. It's a wonderful bucolic setting where you can let all your worries go aside and you can experience all kinds of things we have scheduled, including dream visits, induced after-death communication, grief recovery, medium spirit communication, psychic empowerment, and a lot of other stuff.
And, you know, our guest tonight will be featured at that retreat, and she, of course, as you can tell, can talk on many different levels, both personally and professionally, about grief and other techniques and healing modalities. And thanks for staying with us, Dr. Hanna. And we left off talking about induced after-death communication. And so I get it in. I mean, how can people contact you to learn more or to schedule something with you?
Well, they can certainly connect with me through my email address. A lot of people do connect with me by email when I have clients that seek me out, probably the easiest way is to just use my email address. I don't know if you want me to give you that now or,
sure.
or not.
Yeah, let's take it.
That is mhannah, which is M-H-A-N-N-A-H.
Right.
413@AOL.com.
Okay. And we'll repeat that, you know, at the end of the show.
Sure.
So certainly the IADC was instrumental, you know, in your personal emergence, you know, from grief. But there are other ways that people can begin to find, you know, some meaning and connection. And a lot of people talk about, you know, meditation. Do you recommend that people meditate?
Well, let me put it this way. I think meditation pretty much saved my life, okay? So, absolutely. In fact, very quick story is I was a meditator when I was in my 20s, about, you know, 30 years ago. And I always found it very difficult. I mean, I did yoga, I did meditation. I did it, I enjoyed it, but it was very hard for me to meditate. And a lot of people tell me that. A lot of people say, you know, they try to meditate, they can't get their mind to quiet down. And I was the same way. I hadn't meditated, like I said, maybe in 30 years. And the week before my daughter took her own life, it got into my head that I better start meditating because she was ill with depression. She was really, really in bad shape. And, of course, I thought that I would just be spending a lot of my life in the upcoming months and years taking care of her and trying to help her. And so I had been trained in transcendental meditation, as well as other meditations, but I had been trained in this transcendental meditation, and I thought, you know, I might as well pick that back up. Now, I wonder if there's a TM teacher around here. And sure enough, in my area, I'm in the Capital District of New York, I called up this TM teacher, and they said, well, do you remember your mantra? Because if you remember your mantra, we can do what's called a renewal or a refresher session. And I said, yes, I do remember my mantra. And so I went over and I renewed, you know, I picked it back up again and remembered it from many, many years ago and started meditating. And a week later, my daughter took her life. So I was ready in the sense of having something right there that I could enter into that was beyond me, that was not just trying to figure out why this happened, or trying to make myself feel better. Not that there's anything wrong with trying to make yourself feel better, but I consider meditation a connection to something greater than us. And in fact, you know, you mentioned earlier how the belief in an afterlife helps people with grief because you know you're going to be reunited, and that I also believe that that's the case. But for me, it's more than that. For me, meditation became and is my connection with the other side. In fact, I believe meditation is the perfect preparation for IADC. And when Alan did IADC with me, when I was the client, you know, he trained me also to be a therapist in IADC, but when I was his client, and I told him, we talked a little bit about meditating and that I had found that meditation at that point, that was about five months after my daughter had passed on, I was telling him that, you know, so far, the only thing that's really helped me is meditation. He said, you know, people that meditate tend to be more likely to have IADC. They tend to be among that group of people that seem to have that experience when they have this treatment. And that is exactly what I discovered. But I also discovered that meditation has been, continues to be, a way of deepening that connection with her, so that IADC and connecting with spirit heals not just because you know you'll see your loved ones again. For me, it's healing because every day I am in contact with my loved one. And if I can do that, anybody can do that.
Mm.
And so if people say to me, well, what's the one thing that you can do to help yourself? I'd say meditate. Because IADC, I think, simply amplifies the effect of meditation. And I'm not saying you won't get an IADC, you won't have an IADC if you don't meditate. That's not the case. But I think meditation enhances the likelihood as well as the quality of that contact.
And there are many different types of meditation. For somebody that's new to it and they didn't want to go to any group or so forth, I guess there are simple focusing techniques. I know,
yes.
Just stare at a candle or try to, focus on their breath. And are there any specific techniques that you use?
Well, I started out using transcendental meditation. It's a very, very simple technique. I mean, you don't even need to have any kind of fancy mantra. It's simply paying attention to your breath and letting the mantra go through your mind over and over again. And really all you're doing is you are narrowing your attention, okay? And when you practice narrowing your attention, what happens is the non-essentials eventually fall away. They fall away. And also, when you do that very simple meditation where you're breathing, you're watching your thoughts come and go. See, people try to fight their thoughts. People try to say, I shouldn't have these thoughts. I should just have my mind clear. And I think that's completely the opposite of the way to meditate. I think meditation is simply being with who you are right now and being inside yourself. And the breathing, of course, relaxes the body and it also relaxes the mind. So that meditation becomes a process of discovery. And then for me, I found many different types of meditation at different points on my journey to be helpful to me. So these days I've been using Holosync, and I also use other kinds of guided meditations. And I don't think that there's any one right way to meditate. I think we're all called in certain directions. We all find different things helpful at different points in time. But the best way to meditate is to just get started, just to make it part of your repertoire, very similar to exercise.
Yeah, and I've heard that when people complain that all that chatter and miscellaneous noise comes in, it's okay, you just let it go, and then and you continue on.
But one thing I want to add about meditation, by the way, I want to add this, and I'll talk more about this on the workshop weekend, but I did discover something that has been tremendously helpful to me, and I would like to share this with people who attend, and that is I started to meditate to music. And I'll tell you how that happened. The way that happened for me, it's such a simple thing to meditate to music, but the way I discovered it was I read a book that you guys have probably read, among the many books I've read and the many books I'm sure you've read, a book by Kenneth Ring, Lessons from the Light. And if you haven't read that book, if your listeners haven't read that book, that is one of the most powerful books you can read, especially when you have lost a loved one, because it puts that loss in a context of tremendous potential and growth. And they happen to mention how certain people have reported when they've had, they talk about near-death experiences and after-death communication and so on in that book, and they mentioned that some people who have had NDEs, near-death experiences, have heard certain music in their near-death experience.
Yeah.
And in the, I believe it was at the back of the book, they listed some songs, some artists and songs that most closely replicate the kind of music these NDEers report hearing. And so I purchased that music and started listening to it. And that music brings me to such a wonderful place, and it helped me, especially in my early days of meditating again, really helped me to find that place within me.
Well, that's a good point. Well, unfortunately, we reached the end of our time. I want to thank you so much for joining us. Again, you can contact Dr. Hannah via her email at it's mhannah413@aol.com. Or if you're fortunate enough to be at our workshop in May, you'll get to meet her firsthand. Thank you so much for being with us, and I look forward to seeing you next month.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks to Fran, and thank you to Forever Family Foundation, which has played a major role in my own recovery.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
All right.
See you next month.
Okay.
Yes, we now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing upon Chuck Rocket, Vicky Steffi, Janet Mayer, Wendy Lippo. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this: to the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And that also goes for our people in Japan and the waters around Japan. And with that, I'd like to say...
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.